we have two cases on our 9 o'clock docket. The first one is Johnson versus Johnson. The second one, Ibarra versus Progressive. We'll go straight through both of those arguments. If the clerk will please announce counsel for the first case.
May it please the court, Ms. Katie Lackey will argue for the appellant, and Mr. Bob Cooper will argue for the appellee.
All right, Ms. Lackey.
Good morning. May it please the court. This appeal arises out of a summary judgment that the appellant believes was improperly granted in favor of the appellee. And the appellant, Mr. Johnson, believes this summary judgment was improper because at the time the summary judgment was granted, the appellant had created fact issues, and therefore it was improper. The fact issues were created based on appellant's affirmative defenses, one of those being pursuant to Section 3.117 of the Texas Business and Commerce Code, and the other being the defense of impossibility. This is a breach of a promissory note that the appellee, Ms. Johnson, filed in the 342nd. Basically, as part of a post-divorce agreement, the parties entered into a promissory note where Mr. Johnson executed a promissory note in the amount of $460,000 in favor of his ex-wife, Ms. Johnson. As part of that same transaction, he also executed a security agreement. In both the note and the security agreement, the collateral of, I believe it's 92,000 shares of Cano Petroleum, Inc. stock was the security for the security agreement, the protection for the note. And again, both of these agreements were executed the same day, part of the same transaction.
But where in the security agreement does it say that the only means of paying off the note upon maturity is via the stock?
I don't believe it does say that, Justice Livingston. However, because this agreement was executed in reliance on his ability to be able to transfer or negotiate those shares, then it's appellant's position that pursuant to Section 3.117, that obligation is modified or nullified because of the impossibility of him to transfer or negotiate the shares.
What about the fact that the security agreement also allowed her to just take the stock upon a default?
He actually couldn't transfer the shares. He couldn't do what was necessary to effectuate that for her because of the internal blackout period that was in place. As you know from the brief, at the time, Mr. Johnson was the chairman and CEO of Cano. He no longer is, and I want to talk to the court a little bit about the factual circumstances that have changed very recently. But at the time that the note matured, at the time of the summary judgment being granted, at the time of this appeal being filed and the brief being filed, Mr. Johnson was the chairman and CEO of Cano. Now, in recent weeks, Cano has been acquired by another company, and I believe just at the end of February, Mr. Johnson actually resigned as chairman and CEO. He has initiated, and we've confirmed this with the financial institution that actually holds the securities that are referenced in both documents. He actually has initiated the procedures for being able to negotiate those shares. As mentioned in the brief, not only was he subject to this internal blackout period while he was at Cano, but also certain securities regulations because he acquired these shares through his employment, through his director, his officer and director capacity at Cano. Under Rule 144 of the Securities Act of 1933, which subjected the negotiability of these shares to a lot stricter scrutiny and more strict guidelines. But he's now, to the extent that that's relevant to the court, he's now initiated the procedures for freeing up those shares.
But that's all outside the record.
Right,
and
because
irrelevant to the status at the situation the suit was.
I agree completely, Your Honor. I wanted to just be forthcoming with the factual change in circumstances.
So we should make the appeal so that once they're freed up, he can pay his obligation and this will all be moved.
That would actually be correct.
Are the parties asking us to abate the appeal?
The appellant would certainly ask the court to consider that, absolutely. We had actually.
From opposing counsel, I'm sure that you've discussed this with opposing counsel, and he's got to be blindsided.
Well, I think what happened was prior to the arguments being set, maybe even prior to the briefs being due, we had actually filed a motion with this court asking that the appeal be abated and that we be referred to mediation because we kind of had some foresight of these events, and it was opposed and the court denied that motion.
Well, we'll hear from opposing counsel on that in a minute.
Do you want me to continue?
Please do.
Okay.
So, you need to get an extra minute or two because this was kind of outside your argument.
I may not need it, but I appreciate that in case I do. But as you pointed out, Justice Livingston, I mean, at the time that the summary judgment was granted, those were the circumstances. These shares were subject to Rule 144, very strict guidelines and scrutiny and negotiability, plus the fact that Mr. Johnson was subject to that internal blackout policy. And so, therefore, you know, we believe that multiple fact issues were created at the summary judgment stage. And sure, ideally, as Justice McCoy pointed out, it'd be great for the Court of Appeals to abate this, get these shares freed up, get the note paid, and it's over. Alternatively, you know, we'd ask that this court reverse the trial court summary judgment. Mm-hmm. And I'll save the rest of my time.
Mr. Hoover.
Thank you, Your Honor. Certainly, as the court knows, and this is a little bit of new information to me this morning to get here as we're going to argue this as far as his ability.
So y'all are going to step outside the courtroom after oral argument and talk this over?
Yes, sir, we'll do that.
Let us know if you would like for us to give you a finite period of time in which to work this out.
Thank you. Fortunately or unfortunately, I was in this case from the divorce up until today. We think this is a basic debt situation. A note was executed. A security agreement was given for stock that was owned by the parties. As in most divorce cases, you're fortunate to have something as collateral. We don't think that the security agreement negates his obligation to pay this. There's nothing in the security agreement. There's no case law cited that would refer us to this. If in our brief, I believe we have expressed and we have met all of the obligations for us to be entitled to have this affirmed.
Let me ask a question. Your order on final summary judgment just gives you an award of damages. So you did not, at the time, foreclose on the stock then?
We did not.
Okay.
And have not.
Okay.
What is interesting in the security agreement is not only does it allow Ms. Johnson, if she wanted to sell the stock, but it allows Mr. Johnson to substitute the collateral in the form of CDs for the balance that might be owing at that time. And this note, as the court can see, was set up with basically quarterly interest payments. There is a period of time between the date of the note, which was April of 07, and when it was signed, which was February of 2010, but I don't think that's in this court's record, but there was an explanation for that. But basically, we think that we're entitled to the debt. The impossibility of performance has been expressed by this court previously that you have to show a physical impossibility, and in this case, he was just demonstrating that he could not sell certain stock. I think under the law, we're entitled, if this stock is not sufficient, we're entitled to go after other assets. We're not restricted by this security agreement to solely his stock. And we gave an example, I think, in our brief. If we assume the position that Mr. Johnson is taking, then as each one of us, if we decide to sell our house and there are not sufficient funds to cover the mortgage, then we don't have to pay it. There is nothing cited in here that would justify anything, in our opinion, other than the court affirming the summary judgment. And again, I will be happy to talk with Ms. Lackey afterwards, but I can assure the court we're not interested in this taking another year, because this has been going on for 3 years now. And again, we would ask that you just simply affirm the judgment. Thank you.
Ms. Lackey, rebuttal?
Yes, just briefly. With respect to appellant's defense of impossibility, I mean, the Texas Supreme Court has told us that where a party's performance is made impracticable by this occurrence or non-occurrence of a certain event, which was a basic assumption on which the contract was made, then his duty to render that performance is discharged.
There's nothing in the contract that says that she only has to look to the stock for repayment.
No, that's absolutely right. And Justice Gabriel, she actually filed a motion for turnover, I believe, in the trial court, and then didn't set it for hearing, didn't follow through. You're right. I mean, if she wanted to try and execute this judgment, she could have and she didn't. But as far as his ability to pay, the intent of both of the parties was that he was going to be able to negotiate these shares in order to pay the note. It doesn't say that. Okay. That was the reliance, was that because, you know, these shares were sort of the basis of the ability to pay, that's how he would take care of it. Nobody could have foreseen that at the date that the note became due, they would have been in merger negotiations, he would have been prohibited from negotiating these shares. And I was not involved in the underlying divorce, but, you know, the note just became due. I'm sorry? Oh, intent outside of the four corners of, well, you know, the reliance that we're talking about here, I don't know that the court actually stated that it had to be in the express terms of the agreement. It was, reliance that both parties had that this obligation would be able to be fulfilled. Neither of them would have known or foreseen that this blackout would have occurred when it did. I don't disagree with that, but that, along with this 3.117 of the Texas and Business Commerce Code, we would ask that you consider these two documents as part of one agreement, and because he could not negotiate the shares that were referenced in both documents, then he, at least for the time period that he was forbidden from negotiating those shares, released from the obligation at that time. Right. Now, as of today, could he negotiate them or share or transfer them? No. But as I said, he has initiated the procedure that's required because these are these special 144 shares that have to go through however many sets of I's and checks and balances in order for him to negotiate them. I have nothing further unless you have additional questions.
Y'all go out and talk this over. Call the clerk of the court afterwards, report back.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Lackey. Thank you, Mr. Hoover. Your case is submitted.